Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. You're tuned to Let's Talk.
We acknowledge the sovereignty of all First Nations people right across the country, particularly the local traditional owners, the Yagara, Turrbal, Yugambeh, Kabi Kabi and Quandamooka peoples. We also acknowledge our old people, First People of this land and elders of more recent arrivals. And of course, good morning to all of our listeners tuned in across the National Indigenous Radio Service. It is great to have your company this Friday morning, the last morning for Let's Talk for 2017. And I'm joined in the studio by Bo Spirum, Chelsea Bond, Dr. Chelsea Bond, and Angelina Hurley. Welcome to you all.
Hello.
Yum. Hey.
It, what a year.
Yes.
Indeed. What a year. And it's been a year of a first, I guess, for all of us, you know. We've all, this is our new layout, Let's Talk, for 2017. We'll start, you know, ladies first. Chelsea, Angelina, how have you felt and how are you feeling about Let's Talk for the year and your sort of, I guess, move into radio broadcast?
Oh, I'm not Angelina.
It's been fun, hey? It was a slow ride first. It was like not sure, you know, how or what form this show was going to take, but it took off pretty quickly, and we knew pretty, straight up maybe after the first month from feedback and talking to women out there, talking to the mob, you know.
That just were onto something.
Go. Yeah, that we're onto something. And, you know, we were hitting some targets and people were enjoying it. But
who'd have thought there was an audience there for black women's complaints?
true.
I think we've all had that.
I know every time I like ask for feedback and it's just, they all just know that we're on the radio now, so it's not, no, you say it, you can say it. And I'm like, so I have to bring it up, I have to talk about it.
Well, let's talk about that. Like, what has been the feedback that you've been getting, you know, from the mob? And it has sort of been since your very first show, and it was sort of an off the cuff thing. It's just an opportunity, you just came together and you're like, what are we going to talk about? Like, well, let's talk about what made us wild this week.
I mean, literally that's how it happened. I remember messaging Angelina and said, come on the show, and she's like, what are we going to talk about? And it's like, just what made us wild. And we just did that.
That's
every
easy.
And then it became like, let's do it every week. I think, you know, we have a lot of fun on the show. We're a bit cheeky. We play, which is, you know, it's fun to do that. Because we have to be serious every other day of the week. So it's, I think there's sometimes a balance between dealing with the reality of oppression and disadvantage and hardship and finding a way to laugh a way through it or to try and make sense of it in a way that's not preachy to an audience but still gets a point across.
Yeah. And this is exactly how we survive and how we've...
Survival.
I don't know how many people don't realise, maybe mainstream, that don't realise that's who we are, that's how we exist.
And that's the sort of yarns that you have, like, without microphones.
That's right, yeah.
And you know what makes me wild is I work in health and there's a lot of research around in Indigenous health, particularly mental health and wellbeing around resilience. And a lot of the research is focused on how to build resilience amongst Indigenous people. And I still to this day can't understand why we're not doing research with Aboriginal women to understand what it is to be resilient, how to be resilient, because it's from our women that there's so much we can take from to learn about resilience. How can we learn from our, and many of us have learned from our senior women and our families about how to be resilient. So, I think we are nourished by the strength and resilience of black women in the work that we do when they, you know, tweet us or message us, and when we know that we're affirming, you know, their pain, as well as their joy. It's something we have a lot of fun, but we do take it very seriously because black women don't get the mic a whole lot of times in this country. We don't get the book deals. We don't get the TV shows.
No.
But thank goodness for black media. Black women can have a voice and we really, really appreciate it.
Well,
as much as we push the boundaries.
Yeah, thank you, Carver.
Wow.
You're
going
red now.
No. In true wild black woman spirit, I wouldn't be the man I was if it wasn't for the deadly black women in my family. So shout out to them too. Brother Bo, it's a bit of a return. It's been a return to radio for you this year.
Yeah, yeah. It has.
Have you found it coming back, particularly to this show, Let's Talk, and joining the lineup?
No, it's good. To be back on radio in general, and that especially back in the station here where I sort of found my feet in what I want to do, and I guess the things that I'm passionate about. How can I push them? In what I love and that there, so no, it was rewarding to know that there is a place for me still here in the station, but then also like the sisters just said, there's all these issues that we face, so then there's that opportunity and that responsibility to sort of not speak for, those people, but, shed some light on, the stuff that we face as Aboriginal, people.
Absolutely. And that's always been the sort of point of this show,
Totally.
And the station is
definitely,
to be able
definitely.
To, shine a light and share some of those yarns that go on, particularly amongst our Melbourne community, for our Melbourne community, but also a lot of the non-Indigenous listeners out there. I want to sort of get your thoughts from all of you. The role, I guess, of Let's Talk in community and Aboriginal media more broadly.
Yeah.
Start with yourself there, Bo.
Yeah, well, I guess, leading up to the start of this year, there was a whole national discussion around the country about changing the date. There wouldn't have been a discussion about whether it's get rid of the day or changing the date if it wasn't for, black media or, the fact that, black people are being seen, on any form of media as well. Mm. So I think, shows like this have been, the catalyst for, discussions. Like this is a discussion that's been around in black community, forever. The fact that, it's starting to get out into mainstream, was a credit to, the legacy of, black media. And then, it's sort of like the format of this station, which is a predominantly, country music, which is associated with white folks a lot, but then you have programs like this, the Murray Hour, Uncle Pete Show, you have Clay in the Morning with Jamie, you had, Dan who had, who was pretty much either doing the drive or the morning show. Now you have Elijah, like we have these black voices, that are sort of, steering the ship, that, have sort of, played into the mind of a lot of the listeners that we, that are regular callers, on their shows, not necessarily this show that we host, but, in a way, they get stuck into, listening to our discussions, and then, that sort of, gets them thinking more, when they do ring up, Elijah or Jamie or Clay, it might not be the sort of, way that we would like, them to ask our questions, but it is, starting that question. It's like, do black followers want to change the date or get rid of the date? It is happening, the discussion around that. That's what I think, the important that this, black media plays in terms of the broader public.
Well, it's on the odd occasion we do get a bit of feedback about being a little bit political.
Why are you looking at us, Angelina? Why?
Not like our show's wild like women.
No, but it speaks to the point that you raised there, Bo, is that, we are promoting a conversation, and that conversation from time to time may be uncomfortable. It may be sort of a little bit, a little bit sort of pointed, but it is a conversation, and it's an overdue conversation.
Yes, definitely.
Mm. There's a lot of overdue
people real.
Sorry. Sorry, brother, yeah.
No, you're right.
No, for all the faults that social media has, it's created a good voice and platform for Indigenous people. You can get caught up, and I was on the verge of, cutting it all off there at one stage and stuff until Chels brought me on the radio, and then she's like sending her all this stuff. Here, what about this? What about this? What about this? The mob's going off about this, and it's just material for Let's Talk, and it's, people who don't have, easy access to big platforms of stuff and important issues for community, and that's what we are, and that's what Let's Talk is, and
What role do you think it plays for non-Indigenous people out there?
A big learning
educative.
Yeah. Eye-opening light bulb moments, I hope. Mm. And we've already had evidence of that. Mm. But yeah,
it's a snapshot, I think, of an into like you were saying before, like a lot of, Wild Black Women's a good example, but a lot of the stuff that we do talk about, it's a snapshot into like genuine conversation between Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
Yeah, yeah. You
know? And it's not stuff that's articles keeping in the papers real, or media reports and this and that. It's what our people talk about.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, I come to media as more of a punter, not someone who, you know, sort of trained in the industry. It was more, you know, when you first yarned me about coming on as a host, I thought about every morning when I'm dropping kids at school and listening to some of the mainstream radio stations where they're talking about news and the current affairs in ways I just can't relate to. Mm. And reading the newspaper after Invasion Day and seeing, you know, thousands of blackfellas walk through the city and not finding any evidence of that event that took place and going, well, the erasure of black people wasn't just when they came on the boat, it's every day in mainstream media. And so for me, the motivation is an Indigenous audience, is that we can see ourselves and hear ourselves and hear a point of view and various points of view. And so for me, I think Indigenous media, I think as it's grown over the decades now, it's not just about promoting Indigenous people to a broad audience, it's also about developing this critical consciousness amongst our own mob. So that we can have some of these, you know, critical debates and stuff. And what I've loved, I think the best thing about Wild Black Women this year is I've had people who I'd never have conversations with about this kind of stuff before, who would ring me up or send me messages, who are deconstructing some of the everyday stuff they see as a result of listening in every week and now sort of being attuned to how racism and sexism are working every day. And so that got me. I was yarning and I'm like, this one rang me up and we've never yarned this kind of way. But they're listening in and it's making them question the world that they live in. And I think that's the really cool part of Indigenous media, is the way in which it nourishes the minds and souls of Indigenous people.
Mm. Hey, that's a good note to take a break on. Let that sink in. You listen to Let's Talk. We'll be back in a moment.
Yeah.
Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm joined by all of our usual hosts from Let's Talk, Bo Spearham, Chelsea Bond, and Angelina Hurley, and myself, Carver Watson. And this is the last show for the year. What's been some of the highlights throughout the last 12 months? Any takers? I think the big thing that springs to my mind is probably the Uluru statement. Which was in May this year, mm-hmm. And subsequently it was a running theme and a lot of conversations going on around that for a large part of the year, and it was only recently knocked back by Malcolm Turnbull. And, I mean, there's been a lot of commentary and opinions either way. I wouldn't mind going around the table and just hearing the views of our hosts and to what this means for Aboriginal Australia. It was obviously on, what's her name the other night? Q&A, one of the favourite shows. Tuesday shows are always good, because you've got a bit of content.
Yeah, just when we think we've got nothing.
Any takers?
On the Uluru statement?
Well, yeah, Uluru statement, or how it was treated by Turnbull, or even, you know, some of the questions that was laid, you know, to Malcolm Turnbull on Monday night.
You know, we just had the anniversary recently of Keating's Redfern address.
Yeah.
Was it 25 years now?
In 92,
And to see where we're at right now in 2017, it's like, wow, how far back have we gone? We're Twilight Zone.
Yeah, true.
You know, when people, if you haven't heard the Redfern address, you need to go and listen to that. That was what lead. Not that Keating was the saviour of the natives. However, there was leadership on some Indigenous issues and a courage there to speak to the Australian people and to challenge the Australian people about its memory of itself. And now we have lies. You know, lies, even about a conservative measure, is framed as radical. And you've got to listen to the language of leadership in this country right now. The words they use, you know, it's not explicit. Like, not the good old days where you could just be straight out racist. It's coded. And the good old days. And that's what we're trying to do with the show, is actually unpack the language days that's used to show what's happening. Because, you know, that's where I feel conflicted, even about critiquing the dismissal of the Uluru statement, because it's not the answer.
No.
Like, it isn't even the answer. So even we've got to, like, protest stuff that we didn't even really want because it's so bad we didn't even get that. You know, so it's this sort of messing with black fellas' heads in this country. so it's I'm caught with it, you know. Yeah. I'm really conflicted by it. And I think what's scary is that there's a complacency in Indigenous affairs and Indigenous political life, we have to connect it to what Howard did and the abolishing ADSIC and the defunding of the black community-controlled sector. I mean, there's a big concerted effort in the era of Close the Gap of dismantling Indigenous leadership and control of our own affairs that's happened for some time, and there's just no letting up on it.
Yeah. We exist in a vacuum at the moment.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it's getting worse. I mean, when Aunty Pat Anderson calls the PM a mission manager, you know we've gone some, like, we, you know, these some of it, when Noel Pearson feels betrayed.
Sorry if that made me laugh out loud.
I still can't read the article. I'm really,
I know.
Like, you now, but I mean, so it's this.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a really scary time in Indigenous affairs, and I think what scares me is people aren't afraid enough of where we're at.
I think people aren't desensitized.
Yeah.
What we experience every day.
And you think it's desensitized?
And we give a few trophies to black people and think that it's all good, but it's not.
Mm. I have this nightmare fear that assimilation is actually working.
It is.
It's scary. A nightmare horror movie.
There was an interesting question by not the young woman, Teela Reid. There was another fella after her, and he more or less said, "All right, Prime Minister, you've said no. What is your vision? What's the way forward?"
What did he say?
Well, he didn't have one.
Yeah, of course.
You know, he wasn't. He really couldn't answer. And I think that's to the point, Chelsea. They don't really have a vision or a way forward, or are going to show any sort of real leadership about trying to establish any meaningful sort of dialogue or relationship with First Nations people.
I mean, and what Turnbull did on Q&A this week with that the Aboriginal woman who raised that question is the way he tried to flip it and suggest. And he insists he used the word token. And tried to suggest that she felt that our elected Indigenous representatives were tokens. Now, she never used that word, but he said it. So it reveals to us his imagining of them, that it is a token measure, and he's they're quite happy with token gestures.
Yeah.
I'd just like to shout out that
not that them ones are.
That young woman, like, she held her ground. Like, they went back and forth. Yeah, like that that was a bit of a spar.
Oh, she needs to come on the show. At the end, she did this thing, because he did that, lectured her about, you know, the whole thing about being a token, this and that, I don't believe they're token. And she just said, "As do I." And she pulled this face, but was just like, "Oh, sister." Like, she was holding it together. Yeah. I was like...
I mean, that's... Hey, well done. But I was quite impressed. It's no sort of, easy feat to spar with a prime minister.
National TV, live.
She held her own. She didn't let him sort of changing of her question or statements sort of dissuade him. Yeah. She pulled him up and said, "That's not what I said. That's not what I asked." So, shout out to her.
I ain't scared of you. She's not scared. She's not scared.
Yeah, good.
Very good. So, what is the way forward? What should we be talking about in this country? You know, we have a platform here on the show, Let's Talk. What should we be talking about, and what should we be, you know, sort of promoting out there that Malcolm Turnbull needs to hear?
Any cricket things sound
in it? Oh, we don't have
it. Need some cricket.
I don't know. Some violins. His resignation would be good.
Hey, just unity, what was the question?
What should we be talking about? What should we start, you know, what should we as Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people be, you know, coming together and really pushing for and making, and you know, if we do have an audience, how should we be using our platform?
We need to talk about power.
Hmm?
Can't talk about culture anymore. We need to talk about power. Who has it and why don't we have it? And how do we get it? I think that a lot of the conversations we have, particularly under the policy climate of new paternalism / close the gap, it's all about saving the native folk, which, you know, it maintains a hierarchical power relationship of which black people are in need of saving from white people. Now, no disrespect to white people. My mother's white. I love white people, just like Uncle Stan. What I'm talking about is power. Sorry, Carver.
Yeah, you've got no chill, eh? Like, he's got like no off button.
There's no hotkey for us, brother. Well, yes, there is actually.
Anyway. I think we need to understand how power works in this country. And as black fellas, we need to be thinking about that and talking about that. And I know culture's important, yes, but culture's been used as a weapon against us. So we can dance our dances.
Yeah, do welcome the country language.
But then we're gonna put you off the stage, and we're gonna do the real business because you're not welcome. And how do we get around the table? Not that that's the only thing. I don't want, in terms of dealing with power, that we want to be just like white fellas.
No,
but we want to have a say over what happens to us.
That was the question I was going to ask. What is power?
Don't know. Don't have it.
And there's really good, you know, examples around the world. You know, like when you look at South Africa and when Mandela got into power, you know, there was, you know, when you talk of power, what is power? You know, and in that sense of, you know, running a country, you know, there wasn't this shift of like economic power to all these black people, you know, in South Africa. You know, when Mandela and the ANC come into power, you know, there were still millions of black fellas over there still living in, you know, the slums and whatnot.
Yep.
You know, or, you know, when you, I guess even when we talk of, you know, other indigenous mobs around the world, like New Zealand, you know, like what real power do they have within their own? Like they have a lot, you know, when you compare it to what we have. But, you know, there's always still that struggle for.
close the gap, traps us in the spine, right, in order to remedy the impacts of not having power, the solution is to exercise more power over us.
Mm.
Yeah.
Like, it's really messed up. It's a really sadistic, abusive relationship that we're in with the state. So apparently in order to get us out of our, you know, welfare dependency, we're going to manage welfare payments and put people on the dole so we can manage their income. Like, how? There's not even evidence base to support those logics.
Mm.
But in 2017, this is seen as innovative and emancipatory social policy. No, of course it's not. you know, getting a job from a mine is seen as a solution to our problem. Like, really?
Mm.
Because you know that money's not coming to us anyway. so, you know, I think that there's a sense of, you know, why we die earlier is a result of not having power.
Mm.
Like, that's, it's just, it is all about power. So until we actually understand how power works and are committed to ensuring that Indigenous people have power, politically, economically, collectively, individually, then we're kind of like this mice on a maze, and we're trying to run faster, but it's stacked against us.
Is there any times like when you can look at like when we had that collective power? Can you think of?
Well, look, and I hate to do the whole ATSIC thing because it wasn't the solution and there were some big problems with it, but we only got a very small pilot period to trial it out, and it wasn't self-determination in its purest sense. But I remember when we had leadership of several, like multiple Indigenous voices, debates, calling out the federal government at times on policy issues. It wasn't just individual spokespeople or advisors. They were critiquing the government. An international spotlight was on this country, and that's why probably, you know, I think ATSIC was disbanded, was it became too powerful. But we had a vibrant community control sector. We had black organisations and black people in jobs. And not all of them were fantastic, but I can name you a whole lot of white organisations that are useless, that get paid a lot of money to work in my community, Denala. So let's not even go there. But why aren't Indigenous people being funded to provide our own services? There used to be a time when that happened. And black fellas had jobs, not just the one black position in a mainstream organisation, because that stuff's violent to black people too. When you're the one Indigenous Centrelink officer, oh my goodness. Or the one health worker at the hospital, oh my goodness. Or the one teacher aide in the school. Like, the state is violent even when it gives us a job. Sorry, I just went off then.
No. Well, that's why. Like you're saying.
I'm thinking it's a wild black woman again.
Like you're saying, that's right. That's why we keep you on mic. That and you know, that thing of we're dealing with Western social issues. You can go to any country and we as Aboriginal people are the ones that are supposed to be responsible for dealing with complex social issues that are structural, that exist in any Western country on the planet. But it's an Indigenous problem in this country, you know?
Yep. And there's always the individual behaviourist approach. So it's all about regulating individual behaviours rather than looking at the structures that create those circumstances. So let's regulate, let's over-surveil, because black people haven't been surveilled or scrutinised enough in this country. Yeah. I mean, we used to have compulsory medical exams to get off the mission back in the day.
Mm.
You know, like the body was surveilled.
You've really grown this show, Chelsea. No more of that easy stuff.
We don't need the health check to get off the mission, we just need to play football. But never mind.
So...
Just ask Sammy.
It does speak about the history of this country, though. We still see the same narrative and relationship that was first formed, you know, over the last 200 years of this country and the status of Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people is that we're always viewed as not saying a problem or something to be dealt with or just something, the flora and fauna, you know.
And you know, they've just changed the job titles. Like we might not have job chief protectors anymore, but I won't name them other names. But, you know, like they've just changed the title of the job, but the job's still the same. And that's the really, I think, frightening part. The policy ideology is still the same. It's just articulated in a different way. I mean, if you think about closing the gap, it's still based on the logic that the Aborigines are a dying race. And if you think about protection and segregation, assimilation, that was all done with good intentions of saving the native from dying out. We just call it close the gap now.
Mm.
But our people are dying quicker than other people.
Yeah, and how are we fixing it? We're doing an individual health behaviourist approach. We tell black people just stop smoking. If you just behave better, you'd live longer. Yeah. If you just exercised more and ate better foods, then it'd all be fixed. But we know about power and its effects on the body. And so there's a whole thing around locus of control, social gradient, social determinants of health. There's a whole body of evidence that talks about why some populations are sicker than others. And at the end of the day, it comes down to power, not how compliant the native is with the various health directives that were given. There's been a few reports out this week about racism in the health system, like quite a few. I mean, we just seen that nurse in WA ranting about, you know, bashing black fellas and stuff. The health system has been inherently racist for some time and the health system hasn't cared about Indigenous people the way a healthcare system should. Mm. We need to call that out, not just to tell the natives to behave better.
And just for the listeners out there, this is your area of expertise, Chelsea Bond. Dr. Chelsea Bond.
Yeah, hey. I got a PhD, not just a confirmation of aboriginality, for saying.
Confirmation of aboriginality.
Very good. So look, we've got a lot to talk about next year then. Power and closing the gap and not closing the gap and
shutting your gap.
You listen to Let's Talk. We're going to take a quick break and reset and refocus this conversation. When we come back, we might talk about next year and what to expect, especially the start of the year, because we come back right in the later part of January, which is a topic that always generates a bit of conversation every year. You listen, Let's Talk. We'll be back in a tick.
Hello, Dan. It's Joe here. I hope you're keeping well. It's the 21st of December. Now they're ringing the last bell. If I get good behavior, I'll be out of here by July. But won't you kiss my kids on Christmas Day? Please don't let them cry for me. I guess the brothers are driving down from Queensland, and Stella's flying in from the coast. They say it's gonna be 100 degrees, even more maybe. But that won't stop the road. Who's gonna make the gravy now? I bet it won't taste the same. Just that flour, salt, a little red wine. Don't forget a dollop of tomato sauce for sweetness and that extra tang. And give my love to Angus and to Frank and Dolly. Tell them all I'm sorry. I screwed up this time. And look after Rita. I'll be thinking of her early Christmas morning when I'm standing. Here, Mary's got a new boyfriend. I hope he can hold his own. Do you remember the last one? What was his name again? Just a little too much cologne. And Roger, you know I'm even gonna miss Roger. Cause there's sure as hell no one in here I wanna fight. I'll break the baby. Have a Merry Christmas. I'm really gonna miss it. All the treasure and the trash. Later in the evening, I can just imagine you put on Junior Marvin and push the tables back. And you dance with Rita. I know you really like her. Just
You're tuned to Let's Talk.
Welcome back to Let's Talk. You are listening to all of the Let's Talks. Let's Talk hosts. I can't talk. I'm supposed to be a host of Let's Talk and I can't talk. Talking on the microphone does that to you. You just have these moments, don't you? Can we all relate in this room?
Please? Yes.
Yeah, slip of the tongue here and there.
Don't look at me.
I'm not looking at you, Chelsea. I'm looking at my reflection in the window over here. We're going to be back just before the 26th of January next year. 26th of January. Thoughts?
Yeah.
Yeah. Survival Day?
Yes.
Invasion Day?
Yes.
Invasion Day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about the unresolved issues in this country. And this is a fine example, I would say.
I think that in the interests of health and well-being, Dr. Bond recommends that all black people just deactivate the social media accounts from the 26th of December until February.
Yeah.
Because you've got to deal with every racist white relative who goes on about it each year. I have to watch the violence vicariously. Yeah.
And you're asked all the time. So what do you do on Australia Day? I'm like, nothing. Nothing. There's no celebration. Mm. It's a hot day. It is just, it's a...
Pardon the pun.
And even if you wanted to do anything, because, it's a public holiday, you go to the beach and it's just like it's...
Mayhem.
Yeah, it's just, it's... Oh, there's... It looks like everyone just jumped on off a boat, literally. The beach looks like that because, the overuse of the revolting...
Of the flag,
of the flag and the patriotism is just like...
Reenacting the invasion of the shoreline.
Yeah, it's like they're reenacting it. It's just, over the top. And that's on top of the fact that it's a really, significantly sorry day for our people. It's just... How much more can you shove it in our face?
Hey.
And then you ask me, what are you doing on Australia Day? You know what I really want to do on Australia Day, but I'm not allowed to say it on the radio.
Well, Chelsea, you just mentioned that everybody should stay off social media. But if people stayed off social media, do you think we'd have seen the amount of public debate that we're seeing now around, things like hashtag change the date?
Yeah.
Look, I think that change the date is not resolve social media. It's kind of, I sound like an auntie now. Complaining about social media. Change the date for me. It
goes back a long time.
Yeah, it's a result of, and look at brother here, of black people marching year in, year out. And I remember seeing some of our mob criticising black fellas for marching over the years on Invasion Day, and they're waving their Australia flag, saying about how they're both Australian and Aboriginal and stuff, who are now joining the marches this year. I won't name names, but you know who you are. I think it's a result of the hard-fought efforts of black fellas.
Mm. Yeah.
Who have theorised about this, marched about this, have spoken about this. Social media is a medium to share some of this stuff, and now change the date's becoming cool, apparently. But, I mean, if they actually listened, we wouldn't be arguing about changing the date. We'd be talking about a treaty. Because change the date is... We actually don't have a date to change it to yet because we haven't had that day yet.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fitting that Invasion Day is celebrated on the 26th of January in this country because it speaks to where we're at right now. And let's not pretend we're anything but that. Yeah. We haven't... It's unfinished business. Mm-hmm. So when we've got the treaties sorted out, then we can talk about which date we're going to change.
So you're not a fan of change the date?
No.
Because
when are we going to change it to?
Yeah, mate, and you're still going to have the...
Mate.
And it's still the...
I saw that online.
My emancipatory work is not conditional upon how to make white people feel good about themselves.
Yeah, I know. It seems we get these little ticks every time non-Indigenous people think something is exactly what you said. It's trendy. It becomes trendy. Yeah. And I'll jump on the bandwagon now. Well, no, let's have black fellas now because everyone's doing it and it's really cool. But there's no...
You were saying before is that, changing the date is not going to address the underlying problem.
I mean, we can't even speak to Parliament. So what are we going to celebrate? What are we celebrating? The colonisers haven't stopped colonising. There's nothing post-colonial about where we're at as a country. So until that day comes, then we can talk about changing the date. But right now I'm like, no, let's keep it as it is, and let's keep the let's be honest about where we are as a nation and how divided this country is because we haven't properly resolved our relationship between the new arrivals and the First Nations peoples in this country. Once we do that, yeah, let's party together. But then we'll have the L.
So
nothing right now, nothing.
No.
What do you think?
So, do you reckon change the date or what? Where are you at?
No, like I was of the standpoint of just getting rid of it altogether, not even celebrating it and that thing. But, you know, like the more people that are having that discussion, you know, hopefully, you know, they sort of, you know, hopefully ask blackfellas.
Hey, you know, that's like, a thought, hey.
Do blackfellas really want to change the date? You know, and then like when you were saying, you're like,
are you saying the change of date is not? I've always sort of associated it with like an Aboriginal social media movement. Are we saying that it's not really an Aboriginal social media movement?
We like change the system.
Yeah.
Dismantle it.
Change your thinking.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, like when you were talking about, you know, like this is a long history of, you know, blackfellas resisting this day. It's, I guess, like 85, 86 years since 80 odd years, you know, since like 1938. You know, when all those blackfellas, you know, were told, you know, like organise the march, but were told, you know, like, you can't have it during the day. You have to have your march in the afternoon. You know, we don't want you disrupting, you know, the parade.
William Cooper?
Yeah, William Cooper.
Yeah. Day of mourning.
Day of mourning. Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, we had day of mourning before these fellas had Australia Day on 26th of January.
Yes.
I mean, it's not like us to our traditions to be longer than theirs, but...
and we've never continued to, you know, debate about changing the date of that anyways as well. Yeah, you know, because I think they actually had a few different dates that they wanted to change Australia Day within the past as well.
Yeah, it's only been around since the early 90s, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, like it's a public holiday anyway.
Yeah.
Or all this theme of, like, nationalism as well, you know, like Anzac.
Well, I mean, Howard brought that in, the whole, you know, going to Gallipoli and the flags and the kind of the sense of patriotism as a response to the pendulum swung too far, you know. It's a new thing, this whole... I mean, I don't remember as a kid the whole Australia Day thing and wearing flags and stuff.
And the fact that we were left out of that just speaks to the same thing we talk about, that unresolved sort of nature of relationship, or the status of relationship with First Nations people. I was talking to Aunty Jean Phillips. Shout out to Aunty Jean Phillips. We all love Aunty Jean Phillips, who's a, you know, she's been around community forever and, you know, heavily involved in the church and this and that. But she said that the theft of this land is the original sin of this country.
Hey.
And, you know, you think of like deadly old women like Aunty Jean who've been around for years and working with our mob, who, you know, doing it tough and, you know, working within the church and this and that. And for a well-meaning, you know, respected elder like her to be able to say we still have not resolved the theft of this land says something.
Are you change the date or what do you...
I don't know. There's twos and fours. You know, there's with our mob for it. But is it it's not even a permanent. It only came in the 90s, a public holiday, and it's just how non-Indigenous people, you know, rewrite history and jump on this and try to make it out like it was a long-standing tradition and all of this stuff, like the stupid Triple J 100, and it's like it's part of our culture as always. No, it wasn't.
No, don't lie.
Don't get and make up all this stuff and then try to push us aside and debate, you know, our history with us when you don't even know it. It's just the whole thing is really infuriating.
It's the you know, and it's always the same mob. It's the freedom of speech mob.
Yeah.
You know, it's those ones that are big on freedom of speech, but it's like whenever you say something that challenges their, you know, as you put it, Chel's power or, you know, or their right to insult or offend, it's like, oh, like, you know, you're being, you know, you're making it political or...
I mean, it's the same contradiction with the those that are really patriotic. If you go to the venues in which people are really celebrating Australia Day and you ask them about the history of this country, I guarantee you they do not know about their own country, which they proclaim to be so proud about. I mean, so if everyone knew our history, every year we get an intake of students, first-year students into university who go, oh, my goodness, I had no idea. You know, and this is just introductory Aboriginality 101. It's not even anything really deep. And so year in, year out, we have these students who keep coming through going, I know nothing about this country.
It's like you see firsthand the failure of the education system. They turn up at university and want to work with or have to know about Indigenous people.
Or the success of the colony.
Mm. Well, they take the Indigenous elective or the one compulsory Indigenous history subject that they have to take for their education degree. You know, this roller coaster of, you know, education with them that you have to go through to learn their own history before you even can get into Indigenous stuff. And that takes, yes. like, you know, half the first of year of their, you know, degree. It's just...
I mean, having to explain to the colonisers how colonisation works is tiring.
Mm. Yeah, and hello, that's not our job.
Hey, and you should know your own system and how it's working, because we have to talk about our culture all the time and know every aspect of it.
That's right.
We're supposed to
be experts on it.
That's,
how come you don't know to say that word? How come you can't pronounce it? I don't know. I wasn't born over there.
Yeah, they're another kind of people, not mine.
What are they missing out on? Because, I mean, you know, we still see this huge divide in this country. And, you know, I remember I was saying to you the other day, Bo, is that, you know, I've heard our old people say that we need to decolonise the coloniser. Mm. You know, is that there's a whole heap of learning that needs to happen for this country and for non-Indigenous people in this country. But what is on the other side of that? You know, if we see this country start to actually embrace a better understanding and educate themselves more about the history of this country, what is on the other side of it? Are we all going to sing Kumbaya?
See, I'm a little bit cynical, surprisingly. I don't know how we educate ourselves out of this system or educate them out of their own system, because it works for them. Mm. And I don't know even how we outperform ourselves out of this system, because a lot of us have tried. A lot of us have grown up with the just be 10 times better. If you just outperform it, you know, and some of our leaders are still espousing that nonsense. I don't know, because I think some of us have tried to be 10 times better and it doesn't do anything. Some of us have invested in being educators to these mob and it still doesn't change anything. So I'm a bit cynical about whether there is this post-colonial, post-racial utopia that we're going to get to. I've kind of resigned myself to just working away, plugging away at the machine, doing little bits to have a go at it, because I can't actually see beyond it because it is so pervasive.
Just the pendulum swing back and forth.
Mm. And so I think we have to be honest about the reality that we're situated within, rather than the promise of the, you know, of a new land. Because we can't go anywhere. We're here.
Yeah.
And we're not going anywhere else. Mm. And we've got to live with our abusers.
Neighbours.
We've got to live with our abusers. No, we have to live with our abusers every day. You know, when women in domestic violence relationships, we say, get out and get away from that. We actually can't escape this abusive relationship. The best we can do is work at how do we survive it, how do we protect ourselves from it, how do we...
We have done that. You know, we've carved out our spaces. We've got the, you know, the ATSIS unit at UQ. We've got our own media platforms. We've got our own medical services, our health services, legal services. We've carved out those safe spaces, if you will.
Yeah, we still have to rationalise their existence. We still have to justify it. We still have, you know, incidents that are called out about why do you have a special space for Indigenous people?
University. Mm. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, we still have to justify why we exist.
There's a lot of
it's funny that, hey, how it works at a deeper level, how we have to prove our existence in this place.
Mm. Every year when you write a funding submission or every, you know, whenever.
Yeah,
How come you've got that? How come, you know what they're really saying is, how come you're still here?
Because we did survive.
Because surprise! We did survive.
But our old people. We've all got those old people.
Yeah.
You know? We had our we had some mob come out for a they were doing a bit of a documentary about our community's involvement in childcare, which will be sort of out there for public consumption, I think, in the new year. But we had a whole heap of old people come, and, you know, when everybody comes to this building, they're like, wow, this is amazing, you know. And we talk about, you know, our people and everybody that was involved in the creation of this place, but all of our community services and that sort of stuff. And they said, they remember not being allowed to go to the swimming pools. Mm. They remember not being able to rent a house.
Mm.
They remember not being allowed to go to the pub, you know. So it's not all that long ago.
And it's still happening.
Mm.
Mm.
Like, this is living history and this is still ongoing. Like, it hasn't gone. It's changed.
It's like subversive. Like, it's like under... You got to do what you do, Chelsea. You got to be able to deconstruct and...
Yeah, but you just got to be vigilant too, and just like own everything, be proud of who you are. Like every time I get, you know, like disillusioned or angry and stuff like that, which may sound like all the time, but it's not. You know, like I really do replay these conversations I've had with old people and elders in my head of, you know, the struggles and stuff that they've gone through and the systems that they grew up with and living under the act and living under the mission. And, you know, I have an uncle who just blatantly just goes, oh, you know, nothing. You have no idea what it was like. And it just shuts me right down.
Mm-mm.
You know, like just remembering, like the realization of the, you know, can't swear, the stuff that they went through, you know, wakes you up.
And I have to say, like, I think for the listener, vigilance is not victimhood. Vigilance is really a survival mechanism that we have to be alert, you know, in order to protect ourselves. And I think the times when racism has knocked me down the greatest is when I allowed myself to believe that I could outperform it. And I couldn't believe then, how come they wouldn't let me get that house to rent? How come that taxi told me to get the F out of his cab? You know, and it's when I thought that I could somehow outperform it that it hit me most. If I know it and know how it works, then I'm not going to let it take me out.
That's right.
And that's where we talk about that critical consciousness. It's not walking around saying, woe is me, I'm a victim, and I, you know, I'm not going to try and do the best I can in the world that I live in. I'm just going to be armoured up to fight this stuff in a really sophisticated and intelligent way, because we're clever people. That's why we survived so long.
I think that's why and our humour, you know, plays into that.
Mm. Yeah.
Because it is real. It does exist.
Yeah.
There's too many of our... But all of our history is a testament.
And the thing about, you know, black fellas are not burning down buildings. We're making jokes.
Yeah, hello. Like,
it's not all that radical, people.
as uncomfortable as it may seem from time to time. Thank you all for joining us this morning. It's been great to have your company all year, and I hope you're all going to come back next year.
Yeah, I hope you'll have us up for yesterday's show.
Very good. Well, to all the listeners out there, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Merry Christmas, I should say, and Happy New Year. And try not to celebrate too much.
Hey! Hashtag close the gap.
Yeah. Thank you, Zoe. You've been listening to Let's Talk. Thanks for your company all year, and we'll be back in the new year. Make sure you join us.
You've been tuned to Let's Talk, highlighting the injustice from community to country, suburb to city, with a multitude of hosts, Bo Spearham, Carver Watson and Chelsea Bond. Weekday mornings from 9 till 10, it's Let's Talk, welcoming the continued sovereignty of all First Nations peoples right across the country.